This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Peter Sprigg back with us on the program this week. Peter is Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. We're going to be continuing a discussion that we began last week with Peter about a recent ruling by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit that upheld the marriage protection laws of four states. Last week, we talked about some of the key findings in the Sixth Circuit's decision, and we will be picking back up with that discussion this week as we consider what impact the Sixth Circuit's ruling could have on the national marriage battle. Peter, welcome back to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Peter, in its opinion, the Sixth Circuit touched on some of the ways that marriage benefits society and also why states that choose to maintain marriage as the union of one man and one woman should be able to do so. But the court focused a great deal of its attention on legal arguments and the policymaking and judicial process that have brought us to where we are now. And frankly, some of the interpretations, some of the actions that courts have taken that the Sixth Circuit opinion seems to suggest were just flat out wrong. And there was a really methodical process by which the majority opinion went through a lot of those different issues. I know that some of the folks that I have spoken about since the opinion came out have felt that that was really a shortcoming of the court's opinion, that it focused much more on the legal aspects and less so on the benefits of marriage or upholding arguments in favor of the benefits of marriage as between a man and a woman to society. What is your response to that? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the Sixth Circuit decision was very good because I don't have the exact quote before me, but it was one that, made me smile a little bit. He said, there are many different ways to approach this issue, but there is one that is not open to us as judges. And that is for us to simply take a poll of this panel to determine what our opinion is about the merits of same-sex marriage as a policy. In other words, judges are not supposed to be giving their opinion on policy questions. They are supposed to be giving their opinion on legal and constitutional questions, which is a quite different matter. And so I think that they pointed out that some of the other courts that have ruled in favor of same-sex marriage have kind of gone on and on about, you know, children who are raised by same-sex couples, for example, and how they would benefit or they might benefit from the same-sex couple who is raising them being permitted to marry and having some of the legal protections that come from that and so forth. And the problem with that is those are all perfectly reasonable arguments to bring up in a debate over same-sex marriage in a legislature, but they are not decisive in a court setting, because the court's only issue is, does the Constitution that we have now, the Constitution of the United States as it is now written, contain within it a right to marry a person of the same sex? And the answer to that question is clearly no. And therefore, all of those other issues are to be debated by the legislature or by the people when they vote on a referendum. Now, some conservative critics who may wish that the Sixth Circuit had gone even further in sort of listing some of the benefits of man-woman marriage need to understand that the same applies to them. I think that that it's really not the place of the court to make a comprehensive argument in favor of why defining marriage as the union of a man and a woman is a superior public policy. Their job is to just look at the law. And in this case, the question is, does the Constitution forbid states to define marriage as the union of a man and a woman? They said the answer to that is clearly no. The question of whether states ought to define it that way is something to be decided by the democratic process.
Are there any other noteworthy findings that jumped out at you that were significant that you felt would be particularly persuasive as this opinion may make its way up to the Supreme Court?
Well, one thing that was very interesting in the opinion, which I'd not seen anywhere else, was most of the opinion, the bulk of the opinion, represented what we might call a a conservative judicial philosophy of judicial restraint. You know, the courts are not to go beyond what the law actually says. And, you know, he looked at existing precedent. He looked at the actual text of the 14th Amendment, looked at how it would have been interpreted at the time that it was adopted, looked at how some of these marriage precedents of the Supreme Court would have been understood at the time that they were handed down. And none of them suggesting that they included the right to same-sex marriage. But then at the end of the opinion, Judge Sutton, who wrote the majority opinion, basically said, even under more liberal theories of jurisprudence, you don't get to a right to same-sex marriage. There are some people who believe, refer to a living constitution, that the Constitution is a living document, and that even though the words in it don't change, that our interpretations of it have to change as society changes and we gain greater enlightenment and understanding and so forth. Well, so Judge Sutton said that even if you believe in this theory of the living constitution, it's contingent on an evolution in the people's standards, not in judges' standards. And it is quite clear that our country is still very sharply divided on this question of same-sex marriage. There is no emerging consensus that among the public that there is a fundamental right to marry a person of the same sex. And therefore, even under this living constitution theory, there is not the proper foundation for declaring this new right. So that I found was one of the more intriguing parts of the opinion, and a little bit unique compared to even other pro-marriage decisions from different courts.
Well, Peter, from the standpoint of our listeners and just providing a word of encouragement to them, I know there's been a lot that we've seen with respect to marriage across the nation and in North Carolina. What words of encouragement and advice would you give to our listeners, especially in light of the Sixth Circuit's opinion in this case and potential likelihood that the Supreme Court may take this issue up, possibly as soon as the next term?
First thing I would say is that when you hear advocates of same-sex marriage talk about how it's inevitable and so forth, and that defenders of one-man, one-woman marriage are on the wrong side of history, don't believe it. That all of these decisions, remember, they went to the Supreme Court last year in 2013 with the case challenging California's Proposition 8, thinking that in June of 2013 they could get a Roe v. Wade of same-sex marriage declaring imposing same-sex marriage as a constitutional right on all 50 states. And they didn't get it. They didn't get it then. Now, that case, the Supreme Court decided not to decide that case. They rejected it on technical grounds and basically didn't issue a decision on the merits there. And in everything that's happened so far, I mean, they thought they were going to get to that point this year. They thought they were going to have some of these cases accepted in October, and then we'd be on track to get this big Roe v. Wade of same-sex marriage decision from the Supreme Court, and the court didn't take those cases. So everything that's happened has simply said this debate is going to continue. So far, there is nothing that has happened that has said this debate is going to end, and that it's going to be resolved for the whole nation once and for all. So we want people to understand this. The debate is ongoing, very active, and the outcome is not at all certain. But the other thing I want to suggest to your listeners is, in terms of their personal lives and their personal conversations, don't be afraid. Have the courage to share your belief that marriage should be defined as the union of a man and a woman. And because there is a concern sort of sociologically about a spiral of silence where if we stop speaking out, even though according to polls, if pollsters ask a question, do you believe that marriage should be defined as the union of a man and a woman? A majority of Americans still say yes, but they've been told, oh, most Americans now support same-sex marriage because of these differently worded polls, and they say, you know, it's inevitable and so forth, and they've made the majority who believe in one-man, one-woman marriage afraid to say that that's what they believe in. And when nobody is saying it, then it becomes more believable that nobody thinks that way anymore. And you get this spiral of silence whereby a minority silences the majority. And therefore, they win because of the silence of their opponents. And we mustn't let that happen. We must continue to speak out in love about the truth that marriage is the union of a man and a woman, and that's inherent to the nature of the institution.
Well, Peter, that is a great admonition to our listeners, and one that we have repeated over and over again, that we really need to stay engaged in this. We need to speak the truth in love and make sure that God's truth about marriage, His first institution, is clearly spoken. What do you think happens in that case if we have a Supreme Court that takes this Sixth Circuit opinion on appeal and they come down on the side of states having the right to define marriage as they wish? What happens in states like North Carolina, where we are under the Fourth Circuit's opinion, the state is issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples, but then the Supreme Court comes back after that and says, hey, we think that the states ought to be able to define marriage as they see fit.
Well, I know that I've, you know, heard people like some of the attorneys from Alliance Defending Freedom have said, this is why states should not change their laws, because some people in the general public might think, you know, oh, well, when a court strikes down a law, that means the law is wiped off the books. Well, no, the law is still on the books. It's just that the state is enjoined from enforcing it. So you have a law that you're not permitted to enforce. Well, presumably, you know, if the court were to rule in favor of these states, then those injunctions that are preventing them from enforcing their own law would be lifted or would be null and void, and therefore they could begin enforcing their own laws again. Now, the question would be what happens to the same-sex couples who have already married, and I think probably their marriages would have to continue to be recognized. That's what happened in California, which, you know, they had a state Supreme Court decision in May of 2008, and they allowed same-sex couples to marry, and then they passed Proposition 8 in November of 2008, and they stopped marrying, but the ones who had already married were still recognized as married, that's probably the best we can hope for would be an outcome like that.
Well, it certainly does create a kind of a chaotic situation, which is what we were anticipating, unfortunately, if the Supreme Court did not take up the Bostick case and the other cases. We're hopeful that we would get a conflicting opinion out of one of the other federal appeals courts, which has now occurred. And Peter, I know that FRC has provided a lot of resources about this. Where can our listeners go to get more information about the Family Research Council and the resources that you have available about marriage and a whole host of other issues?
Well, the easiest place to go is to our website, www.frc.org, FRC for Family Research Council. And yeah, you'll find an abundance of resources there from short talking points to more detailed booklets and pamphlets and so forth addressing this issue, as well as our legal briefs that we have filed, friend of the court briefs that we've filed in some of these cases, making more detailed legal arguments as well.
Well, thank you for that, and I would encourage our listeners to avail themselves of that information so that they are better equipped when they engage in conversations about marriage and these other critically important issues that we're facing daily in our culture. Unfortunately, Peter, we're out of time for this week, but I want to thank you so much for being with us again on Family Policy Matters, for all your great work defending family values and marriage at the Family Research Council, and just for your commitment to speaking the truth in love.
Thank you very much.
Before we close, I would like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org. Thank you.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.